This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080.
Good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Saddle up and let's be some rough riders. Who wants to go? Anyway, a little aerobic action there. Many of the topics that I want to speak on and share, talk about, and if you'd like to, feel free to call in 524-1080. And, of course, you can pick up everything repeated and replayed at carolcox.com. That's the website, and it is podcast about 25 minutes after we go off air on average. So just carolcox.com, and if you have a comment and you're afraid to talk on the radio or want to send an email, send it to carol@carolcox.com. Well, we saw in the news a couple of things. Department of Land and Natural Resources is something we've never talked about on this show, of course, and we're completely infatuated and in love with them, as you know. Have nothing but praise for them. and oh, that's the last, the other shows. But the reality is, how about that one where the officer leaves a scene while you're trying to file a complaint? Now, that's I've spoken on many a subjects in the lack of qualification, lack of professionalism, lack of oversight, lack of guidance. We have William Isler there steering this. Now, mind you, all of these things in the recent past comes onto him. And like we were critical of Laura Thielen and Young, I think that William Isler really needs to pony up and own up to some of this and speak to some of these things publicly. I saw him in the newspaper out at the Marsh dedication. That's fine, good picture shots, but let's speak to the real issues. This officer, as I had spoken to you, the climate in DLNR, by the way, I'm informed he announced that Randy Awo, who was being allowed to stay here and draw per diem for several years now, a couple of years, and expenses, but was actually stationed in Maui, but acting director, enforcement chief, and had per diem and all of those good things, and he finally promoted him. And just about the same time on the cusp of that was this incident where just one of many, where the officer is contacted by a victim of a crime, an ongoing crime, a crime in progress, and the gentleman reported it and the officer left. Now, I've seen this officer, and I'm not going to mention his name, not because I'm trying to conceal anything, but there's some other things I want to check on. But, you know, I told you that many of the DLNR people, especially in the law enforcement, and mind you now, there are a great many of them that are professional. And they have the ability and can work and willing to work, but there are some of them that are just, you have to ask yourself, how do they make it in life? And this is one of those cases. This individual, I'm told, was a washout in the Honolulu Police Department and then had some experience at the Harbor Patrol because of relationships with relatives and found his way to the DLNR, DOCARE. So when you call the police, and this is why I'm really adamant about when people complain about it, they see the Honolulu Police Department running the light, so to speak, quote, running the light or speeding. I got to tell you, and this is not in the butt-kissing mode, but let me just suggest to you, you might want to entertain and approach your legislators, ask them to fund the Honolulu Police Department, sign a memorandum of agreement. They are the real police. These other guys, they are in people who believe, the bulk of them in the DOCARE believe they are entitled, and their entitlement is to be able to work one day and run 5 days a week. When I say run away from work, hide from work. If I were to take you and show you some of their residences and where the car is just parked there, the official truck is parked there, they do no work. Nighttime, turtles are being slaughtered, eaten, captured, killed. They can't work, won't get paid, can't get paid. But if there's a fireworks show, they're there. So the importance, if they make an arrest, they rely on the Honolulu Police Department. If you see a violation, 99.9% of the time, it goes to the Honolulu Police Department eventually. The Honolulu Police Department is overworked, underpaid, and having to carry the scuzz bucket for DLNR and other agencies. The Harbor Patrol, at one time, as I shared with you, did not even have weapons because they had the wrong training. They purchased weapons, but they had to recall them. This is about the same time their higher-ups were buying drones to fly over the harbor. So there's a very poor climate here, and the importance of professionalism escaped many of the supervisors, the leaders, the chairman of DLNR, and it just can't continue. Imagine you being robbed, ripped off, and you can contact a police officer. Let me be careful, not a police officer, a DoCare officer, because when you see Honolulu Police Department, you should smile now, because let me tell you, there are guys, an agency called the DoCare, that is taking your tax dollars and having more fun than anybody, and they don't have to have accountability. They have no accountability. None. Isla is, and the rest of the staff should have been speaking to this. There should have been an investigation convened on it. And I've said many times, you have supervisors in DoCare that are working two jobs. And sometimes those jobs conflict with one another. And it has been occurring on weekly, daily. Have one gentleman that takes his truck, official truck, purposely drives it at a certain time to park it at Pier 19, let's say. Parks it in there, change clothes, gets in his private car, off early and goes to the airport and serves as a security guard. You see, because if you have a weapon and you're legally issued a weapon, you can make a little more money and you're in greater demand by the airport of security companies or security companies anywhere. So it's not a surprise or shock that an officer would be contacted and informed that there's a crime in progress and run away. It's just not and these things don't show up in the news stories because they're just not there and no one's speaking to them. And I'm following some things now, and hopefully I'll get to the bottom of it next week. Situations, supervisors in DoCare. This is the kinds of things that are out there being talked about. One officer, supervisor level, goes into a sunglass shop and demand that he gets 50% because he's a police officer. And so we're going to follow up on that. The information that I have right now is not sketchy. It's reliable, but I just need to check on some more information on it. But how does one come to accept all of this if you're in a role of leadership? Again, I'm getting calls about long-lived businesses who have been working, living on state property in the harbors, not paying any money or paying very minimal. And it's brought to the attention of people like Ed Underwood. So this place is in shambles. This is why we see the decline in natural resources, the quality of them. We have an agency, supposedly, set up by the legislators, funded by the legislators, to be efficient and working, but it's just not working. So anyway, that's another side to that whole issue of the gentleman. And then if you want to, you can go out to Sand Island out there near Kehi, and quite often you'll see this young man or this officer. Maybe he'll wisen up now and not. But you'll find him sleeping, backed up in the into the area that he can hide, conceal himself in his truck and with his tinted windows and fall asleep. I've actually driven up to him, and there he is snoring. So this is while on duty. Again, the shame of it is, but I don't believe any of them are ashamed of themselves. They just see it as an entitlement. They got a job, they're a state worker, and they make it bad for the real workers in Deal and our Doe Care, and there are many. But when you see a story like this, it's what's the old saying, one attaboy or one old, you know, poop erases 1,000 attaboys. And this is one of those when you turn on the news and you see this report. No matter what you've done in the last couple of months that is good, this overwhelms and takes over, and this is left indelibly in the minds of the taxpayer. And when it's not fair, and this is why officers, I guess, are calling me and sharing the other side of this in the greater details. But, again, I'll call this one out to Mr. Isla once again. We have an officer who has allegedly shot himself, killed himself in a state office, and won't speak to that, supposedly on the investigation. We have weapons stored at Manana just carelessly. We have men that are working two jobs, and it just goes on and on. We have the Doe Care, we have the Doe Bar, Department of Boating and Recreation, completely infested with corruption. And yet we see this pretty picture with the guy with the stick digging a hole. I wonder how long that's going to take when to dig that hole with the sticks that you see, the ceremonial sticks. But we are really doing little or nothing for the resources. In fact, that's what some say Deal and R means, do little or nothing for the resources. But that's just one of the things, and we can't accept, I won't say we, I won't accept it, and I'll continue to remind and share with you. But you should be alarmed, and I'm not being facetious about seeking some memorandum of agreement with the Honolulu Police Department. They may not accept it, but a lot of the times I'm talking to some of the officers in the Honolulu Police Department, and the public can't discern or distinguish when they pick up the phone and call a number if they see a turtle. They don't know that the real agency is DLNR, but it leaves an impression on their mind that, well, we call the police department and they didn't do anything, when in fact that's not right, it's not accurate. Their limit is what they can do in their jurisdiction, and why should their resources be taxed when you have a bunch of lazy dudes with guns, well-funded, well-fed, have vehicles issued to them, uniforms, and all those good things, overtime, sick leave, vacation leave, and yet they can't respond. And so you're left with the impression that I call the police department, when in fact you're not really calling the police department. William Island needs to address the issue of when you call the Honolulu Department of Department of Conservation, law enforcement, on weekends and at night times, you're likely to get an answering service. So if you're reporting a in-progress violation, the take of a turtle, and by the way, this is becoming rampant, the killing of turtles, mind you, slaughtering at various parks, and illegal netting and fishing. But nothing's happening. So you might want to, I would at least, the Honolulu Police Department should be compensated, or the DLNR should own up to its shortcomings and failures and lack of professional behavior. So that's just one of the things. But I've talked to you about cockfighting, and in the same vein, you know, that we talked about cockfighting, we've talked about animal protection and cruelty, and I'm opposed to any type of cruelty, or any abuse. I mean, that goes, I don't need to say that, obviously. I don't think anybody would think that I would. But, and I think many of you don't appreciate cruelty and what have you. So that's why a lot of us and many of us and many of you give donations to various organizations or give their time volunteering to help animals. And in helping animals, we help ourselves because it feels good. But I've been following this cockfight issue, not from the, well, both from the concern of cruelty, but also there is an element of violence that is really surfaced. And some say violence has been there all the time, but it was more of a subdued behavior, individuals. But now, apparently, the concerns in Waianae and other places is that there's a gang that is approaching some of the cockfighters, some of the breeders. And I want you to listen carefully and take away, because some of you might say, well, if it's cockfighting, who cares? But as I share with you the incident where they shot into the homes, the home of a family. So yesterday there was we'll call it a protest, that some of the community members got together, and in the early morning, in the early morning, went to protest a known cockfighting arena. And apparently this was supposed to have 32 registered entries or fighters, and each fighter would have four cock. It was a four cock derby at $1,200 per cock. So each fighter, 32 of them, would bring four cocks and pay $1,200 for entry for each cock. So imagine the amount of money, and it can be higher. And then you'd have hundreds of people to come and participate in the actual betting. So apparently, I was there and I filmed it, and it was aired last night on KHON. But the people there had an impact and an influence because the owner or the promoter, the owner of the land and the promoter, became alarmed, and so did some of the participants that had entered the derby. They called the derby off. So the community is having some impact, and you can do it yourself. Any issue you have, if you get together as a community, it's your community, you have the actual controls. So what happened is that they went ahead and protested that, and apparently in the process, when they shut down, there was another cockfight at Miley Road, and so the group moved over to that to protest that as well, and then apparently the special weapons or SWAT, we'll call them SWATs, or Honolulu Police Department, raided that particular one and arrested an individual for the possession of gas. So the Honolulu Police Department gets out there, do their job. Now imagine calling DLNR. You might find DLNR at a Kentucky Fried Chicken shop, but you'll never find them at a cockfight. Well, I back that up. You will find some of them actually fighting cocks. Yeah, DLNR doe care officers. I actually witnessed myself that, in fact, seeing a doe care officer with at a cockfight there in Haleiwa. And so, you know, it's not that. But, again, like doe care, who do you call when there's a cockfight? Well, again, this is why I suggest that we need to give more money to the Honolulu Police Department and back off and give them some respect, because we would have a lawless society if we didn't rely on the Honolulu Police Department, because these other knuckleheads are not doing it, folks. I'll be honest with you. They're carrying guns. They're not skilled. They can't book anyone. Doing a drug test is out of the picture. Testing for alcohol is out of the picture, right? So it's all on the shoulders of the Honolulu Police Department, believe it or not. And anyone wants to take me to task with that, I'm armed with quite a bit of information and examples. So, and I'm not advocating for the Honolulu Department of a Police Department. I'm just sharing with you that where we might think we have patched holes of the pukas and protecting the community, there's this gaping hole that no one wants to speak about, no one wishes to address. The people at ILO's level and down will not speak to it, will not address it, refuse to take the reins and control it. But at this cockfight, I did a little something yesterday just to demonstrate how people can lull us into thinking that they got a handle on it. And they tell you, say, and this in this situation would be the Hawaiian Humane Society. And you've heard me say, if I was you, in my opinion, I would think many of places and other organizations to give donations to. I wouldn't stop giving donations because there are some people that own up and use that money, and not all talk, but a lot of walk. And again, I'm going to let you hear a tape that I recorded yesterday, a conversation between myself and the Hawaiian Humane Society. It only takes maybe a minute. But you see on TV, they're always caring. When there's an incident, they pop up, and they're saying, we have it under investigation, whether it's cockfighting, dogfighting, animal abuse, they're there, you see. They're there. Please send money is the last statement they make. We could use some money to keep doing what we're doing and fighting this fight against cruelty and the protection and the love for animals. So I'm reporting a cockfight in this conversation to the Hawaiian Humane Society. And I want you to just listen to what goes on.
What's this road here? Miley Road? Yes, hi. I was calling to report a cockfight at 86459 Maile Road.
Okay, so for cockfights, you call HPD?
No, you guys are the ones that fight cruelty to animals, right?
Yes, we do, but for cockfights, that would be HPD because they would need to go out there immediately.
Well, why don't you call them? I'll give you the information and you call them and report it.
Because you're the one who are witnessing it, so we need you to call them.
Well, I want you guys to come out here, the Humane Society, to come out here. And
yeah, we're not able to. HPD is the one who enforces cockfighting.
Well, why are you not able to?
Because we don't have any type of protection, so HPD would have to go out there.
So you don't investigate cockfights? Only HPD?
HPD needs our assistance. We help them with it, but they're the ones who
What do you help? I'm just trying for clarity. What do you help them with? Just put in the chickens if you see some? If they see some, you take care of the chickens?
If they go out there and they need help, like, containing the animals, once they do what they need to as far as enforcement, mm-hmm. if they needed help, like, containing the chickens or something like that.
Okay, but I hear you guys always say you're investigating. If you see anything cruelty to animals, call the Humane Society. Now we call
them. Yeah, we do investigations of cruelties, but we don't do anything with cockfighting because it deals with narcotics as well, firearms, stuff like that tend to happen. So that's why HPD has to handle it.
Oh, so that's what the Humane Society tell you guys, the workers?
I'm sorry?
The workers, the Humane Society tell you guys that?
Well, we are the Humane Society, but as far as the enforcement that we do, we do investigations of cruelty, but as far as cockfight, cockfighting and dogfighting, since it has a lot to do with like narcotics, gang, you know, gang affiliation, stuff like that. It'd be too much of a danger for us to go out there and do the investigation because we don't have, you know, any type of protection. So HPD is the ones who have to go out there and do the investigation.
So what's the deal then? So you won't come out here?
Yeah, we cannot. We don't have the capabilities of doing that. HPD.
Yeah, but I understand if you were to, I reported to you, you come out and look at it, and then in turn you could call the police department because.
No, we don't go out there at all. If there's a cockfighting happening, you'd have to call HPD, and if HPD needs our assistance, then we go out there as well.
Really?
But yeah, but they would have to call us for cockfights.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, and what's your name?
My name is Andrew.
Andrew? Okay, so nobody going to come out here.
It would have to be HPD, so you can call them.
Okay, already.
Okay.
What's the number of the HPD?
You just call 911.
Okay, so you guys, let me make sure so I don't call again. You don't respond, the public should not call you for cockfighting.
No.
And they, because you don't, there's drugs and weapons and all involved, so you guys.
There's a high possibility of there being.
Okay.
Those type of things, yeah.
Okay, well, let me get off of here. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye. Hello.
Well, funny thing about that is that the reason they don't go is there might be drugs, guns, or what, violence. But if you're eating dog, I guess they wouldn't investigate that either because most people will use a knife to cut the meat when they're eating dogs, or they'll have a fork and might stab you in the eye, I guess, if you come as a humane society, and they could become violent. So my point here is just to share with you the raw. This isn't made up. The raw deal that, once again, who are you going to call? The Honolulu Police Department. When you want real police work done, call the Honolulu Police Department. When you want to get jerked around and snuffed and an envelope in the mail that says send money, call these guys. You see? And they both DoCare and the Hawaiian Humane Society have a luxury of a sort. I'll describe it as a luxury. See, no one is going to not care for animals. There's absolutely no way that you could present a dog that has been injured or abused and not trigger some emotional concerns amongst people. They're going to, it's going to do something for you, that to you, that moves you and make you care and feel. That's what these entities are have learned to master. You heard it yourself. They don't do dog investigations. Now, I'm pretty sure I'll probably hear from them that that was just one employee who was misinformed. But again, regardless, they didn't arrive. So the system is either broken or that gentleman is a reflection of exactly what I've been stating all along, that they don't care, but you and I, on the evening news or in the newspapers, when we go to Petco and see them standing there with an apron on, stroking a dog or a cat, and they're stroking you also because here they won't respond. Who are you going to call? The Honolulu Police Department. Call the DoCare? Honolulu Police Department. So we are shoveling money to these entities. And they're doing absolutely nothing. And I'm when I say nothing, I'm sure many of you can, some lady called the other day and said, they do good. I did that tape, and if the caller they called last week or saying what was it that they do, and they do good. But also, my question would be, do they do good enough? And so when you see a chicken fight issue or cockfighting debate, there is the Humane Society, Hawaiian Humane Society, speaking out against that, saying that, you know, they are against cockfighting and we should do these things and what have you. But the reality is, let's ask the question, what do they really do? Well, you heard it firsthand. Now, I was provided some information through sources here off the internet, actually. This is Pam Burns, a 2003 article, and it was from different sources in Star Bulletin. 2003, Pam Burns says, while we believe cockfighting should be a felony, we are not enforcing it to the fullest extent of the current law. It is kind of difficult to argue why it should be increased to a felony. This is when they were trying to make it a felony, for make cockfighting a felony. Every time you have a subject of cockfighting, cruelty to the animals, here you are, you have these people that are standing up there, and it's there's no limit to what they can say, because the average person isn't going to challenge them and demand them to produce a work product, because you don't want to be the person, the spoily sport, to challenge the Humane Society or any entity that is taking money and supposedly protecting and investigating cockfights. Now, I don't expect the Humane Society to strap on guns, which they don't have, and rush to a cockfight. But in this instance, it is ongoing. They don't stop and start in minutes. They go for the day. You ask where. You come out and you confirm, and you call the police. Because if I call the police and they come and make a seizure, they're going to need some assistance. But the impression that you're left with as a citizen and a potential donor is that send money and we'll use it to investigate cockfighting and dogfighting. But you heard it yourself. This young man says that we don't do cockfighting. We don't do dogfighting. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Yeah, Carol Cox. I'm just a little confused regarding these two cases.
Turn your radio down in the back, because I'm sure you got something profound, so I don't want to miss it.
Am I better now?
Yeah, that's better.
Well, I'm confused. In a case...
Go ahead.
...criminal activity.
Go ahead. You broke up there, Ed. Go again. Try that again.
In the case of the cockfight, that is a criminal, illegal activity going on, right?
Well, yeah. Cockfighting is illegal.
Why would you call Humane Society? You'd call 911.
Why would
I? In the case of the voter who witnesses a robbery in progress involving his vote, why would he call DLNR? He should be calling 911.
Well,
that's my question. I'm a little confused here.
Well, confused about what aspect of it? Because you're confusing me.
Well,
it is,
when a crime's in progress, you don't call DLNR.
According to what?
It's on a boat, you call the police department.
According to what, sir?
I said the crime is in progress. Because just because it's a boat, why would you call DLNR? If it was my boat, I'd call 911. I'd call the police.
Well, I would say that would be your approach to that, and it's not right or wrong. And then to question that is, why would you call the DLNR? Well, first of all, in this area, this is a jurisdiction. This person is anchored in the state waters. It is a jurisdiction of DLNR, DOBAR. And the sister agency that enforces these regulations in that area is DOCARE. It's assigned by the legislators. This isn't just, hey, buddy, you can give me a call when you want some help. That is the reason that they're there. That is the reason.
No.
I mean, I'm answering your question. This is
I'm answering your question.
Okay.
My question is, I agree that DLNR has jurisdiction in regards to voting. But in robbery or murder, you wouldn't call the police department.
Okay, all right. Well, I understand.
In the case of a cockfight, why call they would say, oh, you call 911, report crime in Bronx.
Well, first of all, Ed, one must not assume that we didn't call the Honolulu Police Department. But in your capacity, I would say that I appreciate what you're saying, and it's good to have stimulating thoughts and comments, and I appreciate you sharing those. But
I'm a little confused.
I understand. You probably.
Yeah, I don't think I should even be in the position.
Pardon me?
100%. I don't agree. Pamela should not, whatever her name is, should not even be in that place. But they are in the position. I agree with you.
Yeah.
But in a case of a criminal, a robbery in progress, we don't call the other law, you call the police department.
Well,
people know there's.
Ed, take a deep breath and understand. I appreciate what you're saying, but let's not overlook.
That's why I'm confused. I wanted your answer. Thank
well,
you,
okay. Anyway, the in answer to your question, Ed, DLNR is a fully deputized or authorized entity specifically for enforcing boating regulations and all of that. And besides, the officer was there in uniform wearing a gun and badge. And if you look on the back of his shirt, it'll say police. So why would you run and call 911 when right at the end of the pier there is a police? So, Ed, I appreciate what you're saying and what you're offering, but if there is confusion, it's about one of those questions, is the glass half empty or half full, or should I have done it this way or should I have done it that way? The fact of the matter is we can't undo what was done and how it was approached. Calling the Honolulu Police Department, and in fact, Ed, just so you'll know, that in the cockfight, and, you know, one must not assume anything, but if you're predisposed of a certain thoughts or certain positions that you just want to be arbitrary, just as a tidbit, we didn't have to call the police department for the cockfighting because, and I guess this without being disrespectful, but being share some humor with you, we didn't have to call the police department to report the cockfight. The cockfighter who sponsored and was holding the cockfight called the police to report that the citizens were there protesting his cockfight. So, again, the police department did arrive timely, swiftly. They arrived, they made an assessment, and they left. Did not make any arrests because the citizens were on public street. Public place, and I just can only think what the policemen were saying. Does this rank in the world's dumbest crooks? You're holding felony activities on your property that falls under the RICO statute, gambling and conspiracy and all kinds of illegal behavior, and you pick up the phone and call the police and report that there are people protesting? But anyway, Ed, that's what we don't do is sometimes you might want to listen to the whole story or assume that there is more details than that. So when we don't or we do, it may not be according to you, but there are some facts that we tend not to speak because it's so voluminous that we're just glancing or glazing over this. So anyway, if you have a question or comment, Ed, feel free to call back and no difficulty. But anyway, this is what's going on. The reality is you shouldn't have this kind of behavior going on. So my recommendation is if you donate money, ask the questions. If you're fighting cockfighting and you're trying to eradicate it or rid the communities of cockfighting of this illegal act, then do it in a fashion. Put up your money. I mean, if you're telling me that I should donate to you and millions of others should donate to you so that you can just go to a cockfight if the Honolulu Police Department calls you, if now, because you're not going to go out on your own. So if the Honolulu Police Department calls you, and they may call you once a year, they may not call you at all. You know this. What is a dollar amount that you're going to receive, though, in donations when you present yourself or your organization as being aggressively pursuing and investigating dog fights and cock fights when, in fact, your personnel or your employees are saying, we don't do that? So let's say you just go to one. Did you need $1 million donation, total donations for $1 million to go at one dog fight and collect three dogs on behalf of the police because they call you? So my point is we have to look at this, and I say exercise some caution, give with caution, or do some due diligence and figure out which organizations are really doing the work and breaking the sweat and, you know, busting the butts. Good morning, caller. Comment or question?
Comment. You know, it's the battle that you're fighting is impossible to win because we have a culture here that believes in cockfighting. It is their culture.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm not saying that it's right. You know, I have roosters myself, and I don't fight them. But I just, you know, I use them for to be around my farm. They clean up bugs. You know, they fight among themselves. You see, chickens, the roosters naturally fight, right?
Mm-hmm.
Each other for the hens. So it's a natural thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the bad thing about it is they put the knives on them, and they, you know, they fight to the death. You know, they
right.
try to at least. So. And when you talk to the people, they're like normal people. It's just they believe that that's their culture. You
mm-hmm.
know what I mean?
Right.
And that's hard to, you know, take away their supposedly their right to fight chickens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And that's a discussion that goes around and around and around.
That's what I mean.
And this question, you know, the subject here is about the culture of people standing back and saying, send us money and give us donations, and we'll eradicate cockfighting. We'll fight it, and we'll invest.
That's impossible. It's like, you know, let's spend some time on something else. And like you said, when they have the because don't anybody disregard that there is so much money involved in that thing. It boggles my mind because I've been to one, and I've seen big cash. You know, do you know what amazed me? Like, they had the ring, you know, and you got these, like, collars in the ring. And this is no lie. I mean, these kids are maybe 20, 24, 20, 26, you know, really young ones. And they got now, this is no lie, Mr. Cox, handfuls of $100 bills taking bets. You know, a big, big wad of hundreds. So I'll take the bet, you know what I mean?
Right.
And so the money is horrendous. And then when they do get done with the chickens, they just throw them in the bushes, the dead ones.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So it's a cruelty to the ultimates, you know what I mean, for an animal that, see, when I have my roosters, they will fight among each other for the hen, and then they will get along, you know, because they'll chase the lesser of the rooster, the you know, not as the one that's stronger than the other one,
mm-hmm.
and they get along. They don't go out to kill each other.
Right.
They'll chase him off to the side. He'll be on the bushes over with one of his hens, maybe with a low hen.
Right.
You know, I feel bad for the other guy that lost, but, you know, I mean, that's just the way it is with the chicken. So the human beings, you know how they are. They take advantage of things, and they just, you know,
yeah.
then it goes to, like you said, it goes to the money, the
right.
drug, the guns, the enforcement of when you don't pay. There's a whole bunch of stuff that,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's just, I don't buy the culture thing anymore after that. You know what I mean?
Right.
The culture thing is that you have a little fight at your house, and because if you put two chickens out and one of them kind of licks the other one, then your chicken won. You don't have to kill each other. You know what I mean?
Right.
You can really have a chicken, but these people, it's a blood thirst. You know
mm-hmm,
what I mean? That's
mm-hmm.
the thing too, huh?
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be a blood sport. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of ugly, man. When I see, you know, because they just throw them in the bushes.
Yeah.
After they get wounded or something like that, they don't take care of it. It's a really good, and they can sew them up and stuff. They may keep them, but otherwise, they just fling them in the bushes.
Yeah.
If they're half, you know, three quarter dead.
Yeah.
And the bushes dead, you know. Then he goes to the next chicken. That's why they got hundreds of them. They raise hundreds because mm-hmm. they go through hundreds.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And a lot of them raise them for actual sale, and believe it or not.
The sale is the other part of the deal where you don't have to do the fighting, and
yeah.
you just make the money.
Yeah. But
I know guys that are here that raise them here, and they sell them to the Philippines. Mm-hmm. They get more money over there because the breed is not there, and we got better breeds here, right. And they're raised better and stuff like that. And they're making livings off this, bro.
Okay.
Selling to the Philippines, not fighting them. You know, they don't even fight them. They go, I'm out of that thing. Too much raised with the cops, and they could be arrested, and the money confiscated and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of, you know, it's a sport to, you know, hey, let them keep it in the Philippines where the people have it. You know what I mean? In the Southeast Asia, that's where it came from. Let's keep it over there.
Yeah, well, one guy took a couple of cocks that he lost, and he decided to put them in the freezer. And when they were being placed in there, you know, one cock says to the other, what did these other chickens do? Well, you know, they're all cut up, wiped up and frozen in the bag. So they must have done something real bad.
You got me, man. It's just, you know, I don't see it. I don't see the blood part. You know, like, I don't like to see any animal suffer.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, and you know.
And they do suffer. You know what I mean? When you look at them, you can tell them. If you ever seen a chicken that's down, you know, I see there's a park, you know, Waiholi Park across from where I live, and I see people just putting the chickens over there, and they're the roosters, and they're like, you know, they're in another world. They've been wounded and stuff like that in the fight, and they, you know, they ain't got no life. They're just like walking around till they die of starvation.
Right.
And so that's pretty cruel. You know, you can't have a heart and fight them chickens. That, you know, right. That's just the way I look at it. And you never get rid of it, so I think we ought to try to, you know, stop something else, you know, like the raping of the forest, you know what I mean, for, you know, and the turtles and something like that, you know, you can get a little bit more support of.
Right.
You know, because the turtles are, you know, they're the most beautiful thing in the ocean just about. You know, they're docile. You can almost go up and touch them. They look at you. You can almost, you know, communicate with the things, you know. And this, same with a chicken. All animals are pretty, you know, high in order of awareness and consciousness. People just don't realize it, you know.
Yeah, you must not have seen the mermaids that I've seen.
Well, that's another story.
Okay,
Mr. Cox, I know you're on a couple of missions. I hope you keep trying to accomplish them. I know you're a strong-willed man.
Well,
it's a new year.
Yeah,
maybe you ought to concentrate on a couple of things that we can really, you know, get behind and accomplish. You know, I know you have that kind of theory in your mind, you know, you want to get something done.
What you got?
What you're doing?
What you got?
So I just wish you luck in the new year, okay?
Alrighty, we'll keep going. All right, thank you. Anyway, whatever it is out there, fight the fight, and there's so many that, believe it or not, it's what I touch is maybe 1 millionth of 10 billion things to be done. So it's not trying to save the world, but it's to raise a consciousness and awareness that we sometimes say we're fighting something and we're protecting things and we're doing all of this, and we get lost in the rhetoric, and we don't have the ability to question a call, and because we expect that if you say you care for animals, you're going to do that. If you say send money to so that we can fund our efforts to protect, then do that. Exhaust your resources in doing that. But don't pick up a phone and then say, we don't go there. We don't do that. And again, my hat's off to the guy who called and reported to the community for protesting his holding a cockfight. That's the ultimate. That's a New Year's laugh. So anyway, and Ed, still love you out there, and share your thoughts again, and we'll be back in the next hour. Thanks. CarolCox.com.
My son. should say. I've been a perfect fool, a perfect fool in every way. I'll make it up to you the time I've heard you so.
Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K108. It's time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080.
Good morning again. Welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. We were having a discussion on not really cockfighting, because that once you start that subject of, quote, cockfighting, all kinds of things come up, and there's going to be a debate and a discussion of culture, and we know the crime. And my reason for discussing it this morning was to share with you the bigger picture was that communities can and have the right and the power to control activities, and all they have to do is speak out. And you know, when things like cockfighting occurring behind closed gates and doors and what have you, fine, I guess some communities will tolerate it. It's that yesterday's group was concerned about the violence associated with it, the shootings and what have you, and potentially innocent people. And it also lent itself to an opportunity, again, when people ask for donations and monies and present themselves as the great hope for any cause, you know, whether it's the U.S. vets, who we talked about briefly last week. Here we are looking and begging for money to help homeless people or people that are unfortunate, have had hardship, and they're having wine glasses and special drinks and catered services and roasted garlic shrimp with pistachios or whatever it is, some fancy. When that money, if you're a nonprofit and begging for money to do the job, and it's already we're scraping the bottom, we should be very careful at what we do with it and try to focus all of that. And if we say we're taking this money for this purpose, then we should be working hard to do that and help those things that we are asking money for. So anyway, just changing the subject a little bit here, you know that last week, Friday, there was the voting commission convened another meeting to hear the status of the subcommittee, receive a report from the subcommittee on the elections debacle or the election fraud. I will call it fraud because it should have never happened, but it did. And so I'm concerned that I know that they reported in the paper that the governor was going to ask the attorney general to look into this. I have to confess, in my opinion, I thought that the governor should have asked that an independent investigation be done, because you look at the situation. The Office of Election is a government agency. Its advisors or legal advisors is the Attorney General's office, the State Attorney General's office. When the Office of Elections also, these questions that came up, then you have the Elections Commission, which is a state commission, which is then also counseled by the State Attorney General. And so as an employee, NAGO, as they've said, well, we have employee matters and issues, and we have to be careful what we talk about. The public now, the first meeting they held, and we expected some answers and some information shelled out and fleshed out. We didn't get it. Then we heard the lady from Big Island, Hilo, and I'm thinking, well, we'll get some kind of results out of that, and we'll hear a report, and we'll hear some actions taken to speak to the primary. We didn't get that. But they punted the ball again and said, well, now we're going to convene a subcommittee. And that subcommittee, as we've talked about it, they didn't fund that subcommittee. And so my question is, what if the Attorney General is going to do any investigation, what are they doing? And how are they going to do it? Because while we were sitting there, the Attorney General, Deputy Attorney General, reminded us all that they can't speak to anything yet because it's just not, it was not legal, or it wouldn't meet some of the rules. It would break some of the rules. So here's what I believe. I believe that there is some hanky-panky going on that went on from day one with this voting, and I still believe it. And now I'm more concerned and convinced that some hanky-panky went on and there was a conspiracy and some illegal activity, because to drag it out and then to come to a report and have a subcommittee to do your work, and then that subcommittee shows up but they don't have any money, and we need to investigate and interview people, where are they going to get the money from? How are they going to, are they going to donate this money out of their own pockets? Another question that I had, just curious of some of the resources that that we have thrown at this election committee and what have you, what is the expertise of the subcommittee? And also, I have a question about, there's one commissioner who's on the subcommittee, Mr. Young. This is his second term, but I tried to review the process and could not find where they, in the minutes that were posted. Now, there may be no problem that he was actually reappointed and in a timely fashion. I don't know, but I tried to find out, and I think it stopped talking about him in May or March, and then his reappointment, but I didn't find any documents. So I asked that question yesterday. But I'm going to get to a few things, and then I have Vince Monowai in the room with me in the studio here. And as you know, Hawaii, the University of Hawaii player, football player, and then went to the Jacksonville Jaguars. And we're going to talk to him about some things that he's here in town doing. He's retiring, and we'll be with him shortly. But let me just share with you real quick. They say that it was incompetence. So my question to the commission is, if it's incompetence, who determined that? How did they arrive at that decision? Was there an investigation? And who did that investigation to draw the conclusion that it was merely incompetence? And if there is such an investigation, where is it so that the public can look at it? Where are the reports of investigations that this subcommittee, are we privy to those, or will it be considered private and that we as citizens can look at it? Who provided them consultation? Were there records of recordings, interviews, audio, written, video, notes of investigation? Will we, the public, be able to see that? Was there any investigative action on the part of the commission? You know, the subcommittee is one thing, but did they have convened another investigation alongside because they had money? What is the dollar amount spent on the subcommittee's investigation? Well, I ask that even though they didn't fund it, I'd still like to ask that because that would give us some idea if the individual spent their own money or was it just done by the seat of the pants from their phone. And then what are the names of the interviews, the interviewees? Who are these people that were interviewed? I'd like to see that. I'd like to see a list, and I'd like to see what it is that they said. I'd like to know even if the subcommittee convened a meeting with the governor to interview him or other politicians who may have had a hand in this process or that may have encouraged. And I would like to see what the precinct reports were. As we shared with you on carolcox.com, the precinct or the primary records from the election of the primary precinct records where there are reports of many problems. And did the commission dictate or set a criteria of items of what have your list of this subcommittee, or was the subcommittee just allowed to wave goodbye and wander into the night of darkness and the darkness of night and do their thing and then return back? Was there any formal approach to this? And what was the investigative resources? Did they rely on the aid of a policeman or investigators? And then I was just still taken aback by the failure of the commission to respond to my original question some months ago. So anyway, I would say this is just a beginning as far as I'm concerned. I believe that there is something terribly going on with this voting, and I'm not just paranoid. It's just that I see how it's unfolding, and we're not a herd of animals, and we are people. And we are entitled to this information because it is our interest. So anyway, I'm going to be right back here shortly and just take a slight break.
Your love lifting me higher.
Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. Just took a brief break there to set up some stuff here. And again, like I say, I have Vince Munawai here, and good morning.
Good morning, good morning.
All right. Tell us, well, we all know who you are and your history here with UH, but if you could bring us up to date on what's happening with you. You were playing for the Jaguars for how many years?
8 years.
So.
And then recently I was just with Atlanta Falcons for 5 months.
So being that you are a professional football player and played in the league, you got any tips for anybody out there that who they should?
Basically take care of your body.
Ah, okay.
I mean, that's like a lot of the veterans told me when I first came in the league that, you know, sooner or later time will catch up to you and, you know, that young, rejuvenated body don't work as well when you get older.
Yeah, and especially getting hit by bodies coming in forces and bam. What does it feel like? When you stepped off the bench there and got on the field and made that first contact,
what was it like? You get the butterflies. You know, my first game that I started as a rookie, it was tough. I mean, you're in a professional part now, and everybody you play, you got to remember, it's like going against a Division I school every game. I mean, a player, you know, as far as like SEC-type players.
Right. So no slacking.
No, it's just, you know, like high school or college, you know, you usually got a, I mean, I don't think it's an easy game, but you usually have one of those games where you get to beat up an opponent or whatever.
Right.
But NFL is not like that. I mean, every week you got somebody that's Pro Bowl or Pro Bowl caliber. It's just crazy. It's just, you're playing 16 weeks of a Division I player every time.
Wow. So you're now retiring or have retired or just on hiatus?
I don't know. It's a possibility. It depends. Just been doing a lot of business. You know, still contemplating. I mean, it's like I said, it's not as easy because you're older now. Your body don't, you know, work the same as before or the energy level. One day your body, you know, might not be sore in that one part that you never hurt before, and then all of a sudden you wake up the next day and sore.
Yeah.
You know, it's just those typical soreness that you get. And but like I said, that was the thing that a lot of veterans told me, you got to take care of your body when you're young.
Yeah, that I guess a lot of the listeners out there hadn't played football, but every morning we wake up, we find a new pain. I didn't know I had. So I can imagine constant, and then the practice in this game is you have to just continue to practice, and that's wear and tear.
Basically, I mean, practice is just another kind of miniature game, and mentally, all you do all day is watch films. I mean, it's just kind of like you're bred to do football, and you know, you go in the mornings, you go to workout, you go to meetings. You come out of meetings, you go back into meetings, you go lunch, you go back into meetings, then you get practice, then you go back into meetings. It's just kind of a, you know, the routine that I had for the past, you know, 13 years.
So the impression that I get is that you get selected and then you come Sunday, you're playing, or Saturday, you're playing. And that's it. But you're saying that there's a lot more going on, the practice, the meetings.
Of course, because like I said, I mean, practice, they're also evaluating you every practice. So it's like you're under the microscope no matter where you go.
Wow.
See, I mean, to me, other jobs, you can kind of tend to take breaks. Or, but when you're on the field, it's like the film is on you every time. I mean, it might be a simple walkthrough if you just kind of like, all right, coach, I know what to do, but you kind of like half it.
Wow.
In practice, I mean, they'll get on you. They'll jump on you real quick.
Really?
You know, they said, you know, what you do in practice, what you going to do in the game. So it's like everything, even though you're doing a walkthrough, you have to have your position right, making sure your angle's right. So it's kind of like I said, it's just it's just like no matter what you do, people are always watching. And, you know, practice, you got to show up. Game, you got to even show up even more. And like I said, I mean, that's why a little bit I contemplated of might retire because it's just, you see more of it now when you get older. You
right.
Know? Like I said, when you're young, you know, you're making money, and, you know, a lot of times you don't really see it when you get older. You know, you want to go party. You wanna
right.
Go, you know, what's to do when a young man,
mm-hmm.
you know, has a lot of money when you just turned 21, 22 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get older, then you realize, like, wow, that's what the veteran was talking about.
Mm-hmm. Did the, at the university, I guess in high school and the university, your coaches kind of coach you and counsel you a bit to warn you of some, help prep you for some of these things that might present themselves, right?
Oh, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the coaches that we had from University of Hawaii that, you know, they were pros themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, June coached a long time in the professional league and also played. You got also NFL players that you played with in college that also advise you. And,
right.
You know, about, like, when you get to the league, it's a business.
Mm-hmm.
The decisions you make of buying a house, or are you waiting, or sometimes you buy a house, you might get released, now you're stuck, you know, so.
Right.
Those are the things you learn along the way, because a lot of people, you know, when you get in the league, you want to buy a house, but one day, you know, you get released because mm-hmm. your first 3 years, basically you can get released without being paid.
Being compensated.
Right.
For the.
So after your fourth year,
mm-hmm.
once you make the season, if they cut you, you're guaranteed your money after 4 years.
I see.
But, so that's why a lot of young guys come in, they don't understand that. They're just thinking, like, oh, I got drafted, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, if they get drafted third or fourth round, they think they're safe. But, you know, during the third and fourth round, you get a good substantial amount of money. I mean, $500,000, some people get to sign. Or,
mm-hmm.
So they're just thinking, oh, I can just buy a house with that. But if the worst, you know, I'm always prepared for the worst case scenario.
Right.
You know. And then when I was able to sign my 5-year contract, where it was a large substantial amount from mm-hmm. the first time. I went from my first 4 years, you know, making almost $2 million to the next 5 years of making $20 million.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, now,
mm-hmm.
you know, in your mind, you're okay to get
home,
a house.
Yeah, you're okay. Some yeah. stability and predictability about it.
Exactly. So, like I said, and along the way, you see those things happen too, you
mm-hmm.
know, where guys get a house and, not a, you know, and especially when the market, you know, went down during
right.
those times, it was just like, you know, people had to file for bankruptcies and all that. So those are the things I kind of glad I learned fast and that, you know, didn't
mm-hmm.
Put me, you know, backwards mm-hmm. instead of forward.
And you have a family, and did you have a family at the early part of this, or this is your family's young in the last 3, 4, 5 years? Or?
Yeah. 6 kids, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I had, 3 when I got drafted?
Mm-hmm.
And then 3 more after.
Now, what you're telling me is stress that I would never have envisioned, the amount of stress. What did you do to deal with that and handling the stress and prepare in your daily activities? Did you go off and do yoga? Did you do what? How did you manage? You look pretty healthy and pretty well kept, and I've spoken with you, and we're going to talk about the big heart part of you too, not the football player, but the big heart that you're sharing and the gestures you've made toward others, the good gestures I should say. But did you do yoga? Did you go to deal with stress or any sessions or anything like that? Or just you were prepared on arrival?
I just always prepared on arrival.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, took it as it come. You know, I like to go watch movies, all the simple stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But I know in the back of my head that for football that I kind of always made sure, hey, you know, this job ain't, you know, long time or forever.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I didn't want to get caught up in, like, if it did end, it end. You know, I didn't want to worry about, you know, what I'm going to do or, you know, is people going to remember me or all that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I kind of just kind of got that out the way before I kind of went into the NFL. It's like, hey, if I play 4 or 5 years, you know, honestly, when I got drafted, I was like, all right, you know. I made some money. I was like,
right.
cool. It was like, hey, you know, this lasts for 2 or 3 years. I'm good, you know. I can save money. I said, you know, I was you know, I'm starting off well with money wise, you know, instead of me after leaving college, I'll be like, man, what am I going to do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes no matter what degree you get, you know, it's hard to still find a job.
Yeah. And speaking of jobs, you were born on this island.
Yes.
And
In Kalihi.
Yep. And then you went to which high school?
Farrington.
Yep. All right, let's hear it for Farrington. And then you go into the university in prose. Now you're back, and I met you through an effort that you were putting forward on the Polly Grace Christmas dinner out at Kalailoa Raceway, where you were very generous and seeing more than 1,000 people with smiles on their face that you helped put on there with in helping Polly Grace. I felt that this guy or this man went through all of this, got all of these riches, and haven't become selfish. And I've watched you, and you've opened a business called Island Shade.
Yes.
Which is what is it?
Tent rentals.
Tent rentals.
Yes.
Well, what's the phone number? Because people, they should be renting from you. But we'll get the information.
Right.
But if you don't have it right now with you, but Island Shades, it's a tent business, and then you're going to approach it with this business strategy of doing what? I'll let you say it. Rather than me trying.
Just, you know, not only with this one, but future businesses
mm-hmm.
also. And my friends came up to me about it. And like I said, we, you know, my thing was, in my head, I know it can work, but
mm-hmm.
we had to make contacts. And like I said, we met, you know, with Sabrina Grace and
mm-hmm.
Patty, and you know, told them my vision as far as what I want to do if I'm possibly going to retire.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I told her, you know, a lot of them that that with the tent rentals that. Every
mm-hmm.
job we do, you know, we're donating to United Way.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, that's something that's, we're not doing it to do that for get jobs. That's a year in, year out type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that I know it's able to do it because you get jobs, you're able to, you know, put in money to,
mm-hmm.
you know, $100 a job to United Way.
Right.
So we actually talked to United Way and, you know, teamed up with them and,
mm-hmm.
you know, they like the idea. Like I said, it's you know, you do the business, but at the end of the day, to do it, you know, you got to have the want to and you got to
mm-hmm.
want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you don't want to do it, then.
And I noticed your kindness isn't based on feeling sorry for someone. That's what I observed in you. You don't give that impression, I'm doing this because I feel sorry.
No.
You're acknowledging that there's a problem and you want to be part of the solution. That's what I appreciated about you. And the other thing is that at some points I thought this was Michael Jackson when we were around all the kids out there. This guy has rock star status, even with the little cakey. They were all running to you and wanting to get that picture with Vince. I mean, and I thought, man. You've spoken on the issue of homelessness and you really want to get at the core of it and participate. Like now you're talking about the United Way and what have you. What do you think about the homeless situation here and how do you view it? And what do you have any suggestions for those out there that to attack this or to work together or do have a solution?
Like we went to see. You know, the homeless family
mm-hmm.
in Eva.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the one situation I heard was just that the people that are supposed to be in homes,
mm-hmm.
you know, some of the people that are supposed to do those jobs kind of take their time,
mm-hmm.
you know. So it's like, to me, whoever doing the job has to want to do the job and care more, you know,
mm-hmm.
not for the job, but for the people, you know. It's kind of like, they're looking at it as like, oh, well, I'll get to them later.
Right.
You know, so that's one thing I learned. Like I said, it's hard because, you know, I've been in and out on the island for the past 10 years. So it's
mm-hmm.
like, this is the first time I've been here this long for
mm-hmm.
during this period.
Yeah. You know, one of the things after I spoke to you yesterday, I was thinking maybe person of your status and standing, the governor should incorporate you in as a task force or Colin Kiffin, the czar of homelessness, because I see it in you and I see your outreach and what you're proposing and what you're doing. I mean, you don't want fanfare. And would you consider participating in that because of that name and that status that you have and your big heart? And I say big heart. You think you would be interested?
No, I don't mind it. I mean, you know, for me, it's me, but mm-hmm. I can't do this without the team that I do have, you know,
right?
That's around me. So the one thing I do know that I make them believe into the things we got to
mm-hmm.
do.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the vision, like the tents we can do.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, even before we even did the tents, I told them, hey, you know, first and foremost, you know, when we get this going, I'm going to give back,
mm-hmm.
you know, so... Those guys never had a problem with that.
Yeah.
And they understand that. And, you know, they're okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's with different things to fund different things.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, it makes it easier when you have the team that are willing to do that because you can pay the workers, you know, pay everything else,
mm-hmm.
give a little.
Mm-hmm.
And you still make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
You know what's wrong with that?
Yeah, I mean it's an economy driven.
Like I said, I mean the things I learned from football is kind of carried on to the business. You know, they'll tell you every day in football is like don't feel sorry for yourself.
Right.
Ain't nobody gonna feel sorry for you. See
mm-hmm.
what you gonna do. And
mm-hmm.
Like I said, I was a determined kid when I was young. Wanted to break the cycle of growing up in Cujillo Park Terrace.
You grew up in Cujillo Park Terrace.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so at that time, you were motivated, huh? That's where you got your inspiration.
Definitely. I mean, not saying that I hated growing there. I loved
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
But it's not something I want for my family or...
Or anyone.
Or anyone.
Yeah.
It's just, that's what it is. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm going to make the best of it.
Well, meaning, apparently you did. You didn't... And so... I you were fortunate. I guess I would describe it as being fortunate. So... play on the June Jones, right?
Yep.
And something about that man in that he had the professional background, but also the skills, the way he elevated the team's standings amongst other teams immediately. So you were a beneficiary of that. What kind of value do you, or how would you assess that? What place
no,
on?
You know, that guy was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Never yelled.
Really?
You know, it always talk, you know, it's like, you know, you so, you know, when I came from Veriton, you used to get yelled at by everybody.
Yeah.
You know. But when you got to UH and I almost went to Utah, you know, I committed to Utah.
Right.
You know, and June came back and said, hey, you know, try to get one more shot at it. And he did. You know, he told me, he goes, you know, when you where you want to live, you know, when you're done. With football, you know, for say if you go Utah and you go play more football. I said, well, I want to come back home to Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
Then mm-hmm. he told me, don't you think you'll benefit more if you play for Hawaii? I said, oh, definitely. And, you know, and then he just told me, he said, you know, I just want you to be part of something special. I know, you know, what happened, you know, team went 0-12, but... I believe something special. Like he just told me those words, and he said, "I just want you to be part of it."
Is that
and
right?
I really believed him. Like
mm-hmm.
you know, it's like, wow, this guy's not selling something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, it benefited all the way around. I mean, you know, playing for Hawaii and
mm-hmm.
and able to stay home, and
mm-hmm.
You know, it's different when you play home and you know you're playing on the. You know, the mainland.
So we look at, I was doing some reading up and I was thinking, in college you played what position?
Offensive guard.
In pro?
Offensive guard.
And so you never changed or?
I just changed the sides. For my first 8 years from high school to college, I played right. And then
uh-huh.
my next 8 years, I played left.
Mm-hmm.
And then Atlanta, they tried to put me to right.
Ah. Uh-huh.
So, but like I said, I mean, my body couldn't hold up when I was with Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're doing good right now. I knew they were going to do good. When I was landing with them, I was like, man, I was excited.
Mm-hmm.
because the head coach there was our D coordinator for the first 5 years in Jacksonville. But I just felt like my legs were stuck in Hungary. But, you know, when I did my, you know, PETA, which is a Samoan tattoo.
Right.
I think that's what kind of hurt the nerves on my legs. And, so it kind of, that's why too, I was released from the Jaguars where, you know, just my body wasn't right. You know, I thought it was going to take like a couple months to heal.
But right.
They actually told me later that the nerves really don't heal for about 2 years.
Oh, man. So what kind of regime are you doing now to stay fit?
Right now we're just doing a lemonade cleanse.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, it's just, you just find different ways to, you know, eat healthy or that's something you learn in the NFL. I mean, when you get the nutritionist, you know, it's a lot of times, you know, it's always what you eat. But, you know, when people go shopping, you got to take the time to read the product. You know, read what's in it, what's not in it. People just assume, oh, it's just like this one. But it might have more things that you don't need in that one. And the funny thing is, the healthy one might taste the same way as the one that got more preservatives, for say.
Right.
You know, not. I mean, it wouldn't be a big difference, but you know what I mean? It's that's one thing I learned in kind of like the healthy. Is that you got to take the time to read the product, grab it, you know, and make sure that those are the things, you know, you're not supposed to eat or whatever.
So let me ask you this. If you could, for a young kid out there listening, what is the thing that you learned in life as a young kid that you carried with you that helped you get through? And what are, can you name one or just one memory or one inspiration moment? And then did you have anything that that you found as a difficulty and going through this process that you wish you had have done or paid more attention to?
You know, as far as, you know, what motivated me every time was you always had people that doubt you. So for me, it was, that's what made me determined.
So
because it wasn't like if I made it, like, you know, look at me now. It's more like I did it, but in the back of my mind, I know that person's mad because I became successful.
Right.
Whether it's football or business. But, you know, there's so much people that says, you know, I mean, you know, my dad's had to say, my dad, 50-something years old, kind of probably still selling drugs, you know, since he was young. And then a lot of the family members said, ah, your kid's going to be the same as you, you know.
And so you want to break that cycle.
Yeah. Or? And also, you know, growing up at KPT is like, you know, after you graduate, you're just going to get a job and you're going to find another place in here with us. I was like, no way. So like I said, that was just instilled with me when I was young. So when I got older, when somebody said I can't do something, you know, I'm going to find a way to do it. You know, and right now for me, that's the business world. If people ask for something, I'm going to try to find it. You know, so that's what I try to do. And like I said, I mean, for the kids who, you know, get into sports that understand that, you know, it's a tough job. It's every day.
Yeah. No slacking.
But sometimes, yeah, but sometimes it sucks because you can't live a regular life, kind of. You know, like,
you're always under the microscope. You're always meeting schedules and time. And you, as they say, you can't be on Hawaiian time or Mississippi time. You got to be on the professional time.
Exactly. I mean, it's just that you're always going to get judged no matter what.
Right.
So I know already, like, I don't try to make people happy or, you know, or try to like me or whatever. You know, I go about my business. I'm going to do what I set out to do and what I want to do. Like I said, you're not going to make everybody happy, but I don't wake up and, you know, try to see who I'm going to make happy today.
Yeah.
You know, but besides the kids, you know,
right.
Me, I love kids. I got six kids. You know, you always watch those commercials. You know, the priceless commercials, you know, you put all this money in, but, man, the smiles, like you said, and
yeah.
The joy that you get It's way more than what you put in.
Yeah, I took away from that out there at the racetrack that day when the kids were, they were clinging to you, and they're all looking up at you, and they were, and many of them didn't want to, you know, you take the picture with you. They didn't want to leave. They wanted to just still stand there with you, and I'm thinking, you know, it's a person like you, of stature, successful, caring. A lot of people stand to benefit from you giving talks or inspiring them or just the sight of you and sharing what it is you have accomplished. But I don't believe it's just what you accomplish in the profession. I think as a person, I've observed you and speaking with you. When we went out there to Howe Bush to meet that family and seeing the little girl, Lolo, when you gave her the gift, the family didn't want you to go.
Oh,
and
it
may not just giving them, but they didn't want you to go when you even arrived. And I thought, there's something about this situation that maybe there's, you know.
No, like, you know, some people, it's tough. Mm-hmm. You know, that one little decision mm-hmm. kind of goes that route. Like I said, I mean, it could have been my, you know, growing up at QBT.
Right.
If I chose to hang out with the gang mm-hmm. or do a lot of things I saw growing up in there,
right,
would I be here right now sitting down talking to you? Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so sometimes it's hard. That one decision you make in your life can either be good or you could be homeless. I don't know, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's probably a simple decision, you know, those things that happen. Mm-hmm. Or just hard times fall at the wrong time.
Right.
You know, and, you know, like I said, that's what I try to do in the business world is mm-hmm. that's the thing that's tough for me. Not too tough, but tough. Like, it's like you meet everybody in the island, you know, you kind of tell them, but at the end of the day, you run into people like, oh, I don't like that person.
Right.
You know, and like I said, I got to tell people, it's like, look, if you believe in what I'm going to do, then that's all that matters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's the hard part. It's like, you know, it's like, okay, well, this person can't work with this person.
Mm-hmm.
Because then it's like, to me, it's like chess. You just got to mm-hmm. put your pieces in place, do it for the right reasons,
mm-hmm.
do it because you want to. Then, like I said, I go from there, and I basically play by ear.
Now, you have that, what would we call them? They're not Muppets, or they're lifelike. You had out at that facility, you had a Santa Claus, you had
Snowman.
Snowman and some other inflatable. How's that business going? Or?
Oh, we didn't really start it yet. We just kind of got it for our own, like, mm-hmm. you know, just to kind of see, hey, what kind of buzz you get.
Yeah.
So we got it at the convention center. We flew up to Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend was like, man, if you get these.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows more about different business stuff.
Right.
So he knows kind of what would work and what mm-hmm. wouldn't. And he said, man, if you get this, it's going to be a good promotional.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, cool. You know me. I, one thing about me, I believe in the person who knows the job.
Right.
You know, I don't go and try to research it myself because mm-hmm. I know that person knows what he's talking about.
Right.
So those things are like when you blow it up, it's like 10 feet tall.
Right. And yeah. and the kids are just excited about that. So I posted some of those on the carolcox.com. So if listeners out there want to see what we're talking about. But I can imagine kids being attracted to it at the malls or at the circuses and fairs and what have you.
People got surprised because they didn't think nobody was in there. They thought
right.
it was just something that you blow up and now it just floats around.
Right.
So all the kids was trying to, is there anybody
is
in
there?
So, like you said, we have those two, the dinosaur,
mm-hmm.
a clown,
mm-hmm.
and a Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
So the other three we kind of got for, like, you know, Halloween. And
right.
The other two was definitely for Christmas and, you know, the kids loved it. It was mm-hmm. like 10 feet tall. I remember telling you about it, but it's different when you actually see it.
When you see it, it's complete. And for those of you out there, if you want to get in contact with Vince and some of his the companies, whatever, 808-84-SHADE, S-H-A-D-E, or 847-4233.
So we actually had those two. Went to a Christmas party
mm-hmm.
for Carrie to the halfway house.
They had, mm-hmm.
they had a party. You were like, man, can we please, you know, use your, I said, sure, go ahead, you know. And then they said they loved it. Mm-hmm. Said, you know, I said, oh, okay, you guys got to at least charge up the battery.
Yeah.
So.
Now, you know, I and unfortunately, the chief, the fire dancers and his group weren't here, but you brought them along with you, and then there was BET, Powell.
Yep.
Unfortunately, he's not here, but I'm going to take a rope and lasso him in one day and get them in and sit and talk with them. But
Chief Cielo.
Yeah, Chief Cielo. How did you guys pull that off? I mean, look, the show, I thought, was probably one of the best shows. The whole thing was awesome. But to put that together in just a few days, I mean, and no charge to the people.
Well, like I said, I mean, I know we do certain, you know, like I said, I like to do more than what, you know, Sabrina asked me. It's like, oh, can you help with the gifts? I said, sure.
Yeah.
You know, but I was asking her, like I said, things just kind of fell in my lap, play by ear.
Right.
The day I met with United Way before I went to Sabrina's, their thing, a couple of days before, you know, United Way, before even agreeing with them, they were like, hey, we got 2,000, or we got milk,
mm-hmm.
you know, for, to donate to you guys' thing if you want. And
right.
I told them there's going to be 2,000 people,
mm-hmm.
and majority of them is kids. They were like, so I said, oh, hold on. I don't know. Let me go call up Sabrina. I go, hey, Sabrina, you know, they're asking if you need milk. She was like, oh, yeah. I said, chocolate milk.
Yeah.
You know, she was just like, man, that's a luxury.
Yeah.
But like I said, I don't know. And, you know, yeah. it just kind of just fell in the lap. And Metal Gold, you know, give a shout out to them. They, you know, they came through and,
mm-hmm.
you know, donated, you know, about 2,000, you know, milk for the kids. And
yeah.
that was awesome.
Yeah, I thought that spoke to, that was a testament to what others see in you as well. One, and I think that you're probably, in the long run, going to be a lot of people in their plight with homelessness and whatever will benefit from just you being there, because that instance where they gave you all of the milk, and then did you get a chance to see any of the little kids? Now, I know I had someone I was telling the story to. Yeah, but that's milk. That's from a cow. Well, okay, fine. Go back to your pasture and let us that smile on that little kid's face and the little boys that were standing there drinking the milk. And
especially his chocolate.
Yeah, and I said, you like that? He goes, oh, we don't ever get this. You know, and I'm thinking, you know.
But Sabrina was talking to me, is like, this is gold. I was like, you know, but like I said, I don't, you know, I'm just kind of learning along the way. And, you know, like I said, I mean, talking to United Way, you know, you're just blessed to, I mean, like I said, I didn't even agree with them yet.
Right.
They were just like, hey, you know.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, sure.
Yeah, that to me, I'm still, I keep going back to that day at the racetrack, seeing you there and what you gave, seeing Polly Grace, what she's given, seeing Metal Gold and all of those people making one day an eventful day. And Chief said, oh, and there was this halal there that was there, and I can't think of her name now, and I apologize, but her halal, I mean, you guys went all out.
Like I said,
you weren't skimping. I mean,
like I said, I mean, just the things that I have, that especially with those guys are good friends of mine too.
Mm-hmm.
That they believe in what I'm gonna do, and like I said, even Chief kind of, they said he teared up a little bit because he, you know, it's different when you hear it. Like, yeah, there's gonna be 2,000 kids, but to actually be there and see it,
mm-hmm.
you know, really touched him and touched a lot of the guys there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the understanding it more, and mm-hmm. the feeling, you know, like mm-hmm. I say, you can never change the feeling. You can never take that feeling away.
Yeah. So we're going to be closing here, Charlotte, but if you could, what would you say? There are many people out there that listen to the show that have no home, that are less fortunate, have experiencing problems. Can you give them any words of encouragement and hope, if you could? What would you share with them?
Just, man, just be determined and keep working to what you need or what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I mean, growing up in KPT, sometimes you had some crying moments. Like, man, you know, God, when is it going to break, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I just kept pushing through, and you know, sure enough, I'm here, but I just kept pushing, you know, I just keep pushing. Sooner or later, like I said, I mean, to me, you're blessed when you have the right people in your corner and the right people that come along the way. Like I said, I mean, meeting you guys, Sabrina, it's just kind of like things are falling into place. And then it kind of makes it easier to do those things. And hopefully I'm one of those guys to bless those people when those time comes. So like I said, I just got to keep pushing through. And hopefully, you know, those people, I think, like I said, I mean, the guy at Habush, didn't he get a job?
He's getting a job now.
So like I said, I mean, it's just one of those things where he was on the beach, I think, for what, a couple months? You know, nobody, if somebody probably took him in, would he have ran into me? You know what I mean? It's kind of one of those things that could be, would he run into you? Would he run into Sabrina? You know, but for him to stay on that long because the other people not doing their job, hey, you know, maybe he was blessed because he met us. And then now I heard he got his job back. And pays him $56 an hour.
One little fluke, one little error in his thing caused him to be homeless.
Right. So sometimes a negative becomes a positive, you know? You know, a guy not doing his job, but, you know, I'm here far as giving the gifts. And, you know, so later on, Sabrina told me, he goes, hey, you know the guy you gave the Christmas gift to? I said, yeah. Remember, he got something happened in the job, and then now they're like, he got his job back. He's getting paid $56 an hour. I said, wow, that's awesome. You know, like, that's even a better feeling when you hear news like that.
So. And they're not all drug addicts out there. And they're not all thieves, and they're not all criminals, you know. And it's unfortunate that there's that stigma attached to them. And, you know, it's just maybe people like yourself, myself, and others who care, and others that'll join in, we can win this.
Yeah, we just got to build the team, got to put the right people, and believe in the cause. Like I said, is, you know, the guys that you have that works for you, they do get paid good money to work in the business, but also to donate their time into the companies to give back to, you know, the people or whatever. Like I said, you know, hopefully if I get 3 or 4 business, which that helps, you know. I mean, being an athlete doesn't guarantee a lot of things, but if I can be an athlete and start some businesses that possibly, you know, can make $1 million or two, we're able to do that.
Yeah.
And now you're not dipping your own pockets. You're actually funding these things through your company, you know. And like I said, it just makes sense. It makes sense to the workers that work with me, and, and they love this. So they're all for it, and, you know, like I said, I just keep pushing.
Well, I hope you willing to come back and sit and just chat again in the near future. And keep me posted on that. And as I say, for Vince, it's Vince Munoz, 808-84-SHADE or 847-4233 is the number for his company. So if you need tent rental or anything such as that, please give him a call at Island Shade. And Vince, thank you for joining me. And Falcons?
Yeah, I appreciate helping me, having me. And like I said, I'm yourself because I'm a 49er fan.
Okay.
But, you know, it's like it's tough when they play at the Falcons because, you know, having a relationship with those guys for 5 months was awesome, man. They were a good bunch of guys, O-line-wise. The team was good. I know they were, you know, going to be this successful. I just wish my body could have kind of held up to be able to do those stuff. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
I'm here now doing the things that maybe God put me here for. And, you know, just go from there. And, you know, I don't know. It's gonna be hard to cheer for either 49ers or Atlanta.
49ers or Atlanta. You're in this tug of war here. But if 49ers win, you don't lose anything. And if the Falcons win.
Yep. Right now, they're up pretty good against Seattle right now. So, you know, hopefully they win because, you know, like I said, the past 4 years, they haven't won any playoff games, no matter how good they were.
Right.
So, you know, trying to get this win for themselves first. And then, you know, they're definitely going to play the 49ers next
week.
Well,
Vince, thank you.
Thank you again.
All right, brother. Do come back again. It's always welcome to come.
I'll bring Paul with me.
Aloha. And thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on K108. Tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show, right here at KWAI Honolulu.